Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal. My co-host, Donna Priskintis, is not with us today, but she will be here next week. This is community radio. We get by with a lot of help from good volunteers, fantastic interns, community support. Oh, yes, we do. And we get by with a little help from our friends. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that's been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org. We thank them for their help, and we thank you, the listener, for being with us today. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We talk about a lot of things here. This is community radio. We're a little different than lots of radio stations. Yes, we are, because this is community-owned, community-run, and this is our fundraiser time. We are asking you to support us and send in donations. Although volunteers make this happen, we need cold hard cash too. So you can call us at 515-292-2878. Come in, become a member, or go to khoifm.org, a fine website. There you can find out more about us. And there is a magic donate button, big yellow thing. You can't miss it. Push it, and you will be helping community radio. Help us fill your ears with good stuff. Well, spring, finally, maybe. The leaves are finally, like, creeping out on the end of the branches and the trees. Boy, it has been a hard-fought spring, I tell you. I'm finally out in the garden, finally putting things in the ground, and with the assurance that perhaps they'll actually do something out there. So I planted, onions and leeks, and I got some shallots in and planted some early greens. It always feels good to do that, even though you end up with a little, kind of a sore back at the end of the day. But that's what bubble baths are for. I found that out. That's a good part. That's a good part of farming, is working hard and relaxing. And farm report. On my little farm here, just northwest of Ames, we had 3 new lambs born last week. Yes, we did. Oh, and they're so darn cute. Yes, they are. We still have others to come. There is one ewe, and I just know she's got something in there, and we're waiting for another lamb to be born, hopefully this week, and we'll have a lamb report. Yes, maybe next week or the week after. Boy, they are just cute. A little male and two twin females. They are there. And this is my first experience on having lambs actually born. I've never seen them that tiny before. Kind of scrawny and wet, but they're fluffing up quite nicely. So stay tuned. In future shows, we will be talking sheep. Yes, we will. Today, we'll be talking about Aldo Leopold. Aldo Leopold is someone who loved the land and wrote about it in such a way that many of us have come to a deeper understanding of our world. He got us to love the land, too. Joining me here at the kitchen table today is Bruce White. Welcome.
Thanks, Lana. Glad to be here.
Great. Bruce is, he moved to Ames about 5 years ago. He retired from the NRCS, which is the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service, in 2013. He grew up near Winterset, and he did a lot of things with forestry and agroforestry. Bruce started his career as a soil conservationist and district conservationist in several Iowa locations. He's here today to talk about Aldo Leopold. What is your connection to Aldo Leopold?
Well, Lana, it kind of goes back. I didn't really get to know about Owl Leopold when I was in school here at Iowa State. But later on, after I started working with NRCS, I was a district conservationist up in Mason City, actually, in Sarasota County, and worked pretty closely with Sarasota County Conservation Group up there. And we had a very active conservation education committee working with school kids throughout Sarasota County. And there was a naturalist that worked for Sarasota County Conservation by the name of Jim Heitzman that really he's probably the one that introduced me to Aldo Leopold. He had connections to Wisconsin. I think Jim had done a lot of interest in nature as well. So that was probably my first introduction to it. And later on, as in my career, I crossed paths with a number of colleagues who had strong ties to Aldo Leopold's philosophy and values. Had worked with an agronomist up in North Dakota that took great pleasure in reading a segment from Sand County Almanac to some of our trainees as we were training them in North Dakota, an essay by the title of Odyssey, which talks about what happens as a seed progresses through its life. And then later on, as I worked with NRCS, one of our later on chiefs back in about the 1990s, Paul Johnson, who was a farmer here in Iowa, still lives up in northeast Iowa near Decorah, and was a state legislator, was also one of the primary founders of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture here at Iowa State. Some of the legislation that he authored or co-authored at that time was responsible for the establishment of the center. But Paul was when he was chief of the NRCS, he was always quoting Aldo Leopold in many of his speeches that he gave to employees, to the public, whoever. And that kind of reignited my interest in Leopold at that time and kind of took me back to reading Sand County Almanac a little more than I had for several years. So a number of connections over the years. And then I guess coming here, I retired and moved to Ames. Heard about Ames Reads Leopold. And
yes, tell us about that. Aldo Leopold wrote this book, and it just piques people's imagination. And tell us, there's an event coming up called Ames Reads Leopold.
Coming up this Sunday, April 29th, it'll be at the Ames Public Library here just down the street on 515 Douglas Avenue. It'll be from 2 to 4 p.m., and we'll have about a dozen people from the community who will be reading different essays from Aldo Leopold's Sand County Almanac, as well as another essay from a different book, as well as a letter that Aldo had written to kind of an open letter to the people in Wisconsin at the time. I think he was the director of the University of Wisconsin Arboretum at the time, about 1938.
Yes, that's an interesting story. What caused that letter to happen?
It's called A Letter to a Wildflower Digger. And Aldo was a little upset that an individual had evidently dug up the last lady slipper, which is a wildflower, in the arboretum. And he wrote this open letter that appeared in publication was, a periodical there in Madison, that chastised this person for digging up the last lady slipper and asking them if it was still surviving in their backyard and all about the loss of this natural resource, and could we come see your lady slipper in your backyard and so forth. So it's pretty interesting. It's a little different. The tenor of that letter is a little different than some of the other Leopold's writings. He was a little bit on the cynical side, sarcastic, I think, in the letter. But he very much believed that we need to take care of our resources.
Yes, he had a wonderful way of talking about things. He was do you know when he was born and where?
He was born in 1887, actually here in Iowa, in Burlington. His father was named Carl and was a businessman in Burlington. Actually, their business made walnut desks. So one of the biographies I was reading, they talked about the log booms coming down the Mississippi River, and they were taking some of the lumber to make some of these walnut desks. But his mother was named Clara, and Clara Starker was her maiden name. And her father was Charles Starker, who was a German immigrant who I'm not sure exactly when he immigrated to the U.S., but he was a prominent businessman in Burlington and had a rather nice estate up overlooking the Mississippi River in Prospect Hill, I think it's called. And both his grandfather, Aldo's grandfather, Charles, and his father, Carl, were instrumental, I think, in introducing Aldo to the outdoors. His dad was a hunter and a woodsman and just spent a lot of time, and he'd always take Aldo and his brothers and sisters out to walk in the woods and hunt and fish and look for ducks and so forth. So up to the point where Aldo spent some of the writings talks about his time as going to school, that he would cut class periodically to go out in the woods and wander around. So, but he was still a very good student and progressed very well through. But he sketched wildlife. He kept a journal. He noted all the birds that he saw. He started a list of birds that he identified at a very young age and maintained that list over many years. So he was very young age was introduced to this, and I think at some point, I'm not sure exactly the timing, but at some point he heard about a fellow by the name of Gifford Pinchot, who was the father of forestry in the United States, and was instrumental in starting a forestry school at Yale. And Aldo was quite interested, I think, at that point he wanted to move on and become a forester. And eventually, after going to a prep school in New Jersey and then eventually going on to Yale, at that time, Yale only offered a master's degree in forestry. So he spent 4 years in biological sciences in Yale and then eventually got a master's degree in forestry from Yale University in the early 1900s.
That's right. There was a time when we thought the forests and the wildlife and the wild lands would sort of last forever. And then long about the beginning of, the last century, people kind of started to wake up and realize that there were things that needed preserving and things that needed studying. I mean, this turned into a study, not just a conquering the wilderness, but studying.
Right. So looking at Pinchot and Theodore Roosevelt were instrumental at the time in the early 1900s of starting a more scientific look at natural resources. Certainly forestry, the science of forestry grew out of that. And it was a need at that time that there was a lot of overuse, I guess, of many of our natural resources, whether it be our forests, too much cutting, over utilization of the forest. And I think there was a view at that time that in this country that it was a never-ending resource, that we would never see the end of all the natural resources that we had.
That's true. You mentioned that Aldo Leopold's family were furniture makers. Mm-hmm. And thinking of all of the lumber that came out of northern Wisconsin and in Minnesota, they used to say that the trees were so thick up there that a squirrel could travel across the state and never touch the ground. So, right. I mean, of course, that's a legend, but still the idea that all that big lumber was used right. and cut rather quickly.
Yes, it was harvested. They just kept moving west as they would progress with cutting over the pine in northern Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Minnesota, and moving on to as the country settled in the west, we just kept moving further and further west and utilizing those resources or overutilizing those resources, both plants but he's also very concerned about wildlife as well. He's also, Aldo is considered the kind of the father of wildlife management. He was the first professor, I believe, in wildlife management at the University of Wisconsin in the 1930s. And he authored one of the first textbooks, I believe, in wildlife management. While he was in about 1933 or 34, in that range. And they established a wildlife program at the University of Wisconsin, which was, I'm pretty sure, was the first in the nation. So between forestry, plants, animals, water, Aldo Leopold had a really strong interest in all and how society and man and women relate to our natural resources.
He was a pioneer and a good thinker, and he wrote so beautifully. I'd like to ask you a little bit more about this, about the Ames Reads. This is people getting up and reading selections, and actually probably a lot of people in the audience have actually heard the things before, but they're so beautiful. It's lovely to read them again. Read them again. How long has the Ames Reads Leopold been going on here?
Pretty sure this is the 11th year for it. It goes back, Irv Kloss, a prominent member of our community, an emeritus professor from Iowa State University in animal ecology, was really the instigator and the leader in starting this program back in the mid-2000s, 2006 about. And Irv heard about, in fact, earlier, about 2000 in Wisconsin, the Leopold Foundation actually started in a little town, Lodi, Wisconsin.
Lodi, yes.
Lodi, Wisconsin, started with Leopold Weekend back in March of 2000, where the citizens of Lodi gathered to read a San Kelly Almanac aloud cover to cover. And it was just amazing to me that they sat there. I don't know how long it took them to read clear through the book. But they read it, and they dubbed it Lodi Reads Leopold. The event was so inspiring and successful that the organizer, the Friends of Scenic Lodi Valley, decided it should be an annual experience. And then after that, the Leopold Foundation, which is based up near Baraboo, Wisconsin, near where Leopold had some land, has taken that on and has been promoting a Leopold Weekend and a Leopold Week, usually in early March. And many communities across the country actually and celebrate the similar type of events, not always at same time period as we are here. We're celebrating it in late April near Earth Day, but the whole idea of trying to reflect back and look at and hear some of the words from Leopold read again and spend some time thinking about and discussing what that means and how it relates to today's issues, which much of what he wrote back in the 1930s and early 40s have direct relationship to some of the issues that we're dealing with today in our natural resources, whether it's water quality issues here in Iowa or just how we use our land both agriculturally and in urban settings together.
Good. Could you read a little bit? His words are so sure. Inspirational. And tell us what we're going to hear, and we'll read a little bit here.
This the segment I'm going to read comes from a section in the latter part of the Santa County Almanac. The almanac is set up where the first part of the almanac is kind of with the word almanac. You think of a year, looking at a year's time. And so it is set up month by month. Talking about some of the things that they observed when they worked and lived out in this small sandy farm that they had up in central Wisconsin. But the latter part of the book deals with a land ethic, Leopold's view on how humans should relate to land. So the segment I wanted to read this afternoon was Ecological Conscience, which comes out of that land ethics segment. So it starts off, conservation is a state of harmony between man and land. Despite nearly a century of propaganda, conservation still proceeds at a snail's pace. Progress still consists largely of letterhead pieties and convention oratory. On the back 40, we still slip two steps backward for each forward stride. The usual answer to this dilemma is more conservation education. No one will debate this, but is it certain that only the volume of education needs stepping up? Is something lacking in the content as well? It is difficult to give a fair summary of its content in brief form, but as I understand it, the content is substantially this: obey the law, vote right, join some organizations, and practice what conservation is profitable on your own land, the government will do the rest. Is not this formula too easy to accomplish anything worthwhile? It defines no right or wrong, assigns no obligations, calls for no sacrifice, implies no change in the current philosophy of values. In respect to land use, it urges only enlightened self-interest. Just how far will such education take us? An example will perhaps yield a partial answer. By 1930, it had become clearer to all except the ecologically blind that southwestern Wisconsin's topsoil was slipping seaward. In 1933, the farmers were told that if they would adopt certain remedial practices for 5 years, the public would donate CCC labor to install them, plus the necessary machinery and materials. The offer was widely accepted, but the practices were widely forgotten when the 5-year contract period was up. The farmers continued only those practices that yielded an immediate and visible economic gain for themselves. This led to the idea that maybe farmers would learn more quickly if they themselves wrote the rules. Accordingly, the Wisconsin legislature in 1937 passed the Soil Conservation District Law. This said to farmers, in effect, we, the public, will furnish you free technical service and loan you specialized machinery if you will write your own rules for land use. Each county may write its own rules, and these will have the force of law. Nearly all the counties promptly organized to accept the proffered help, but after a decade of operation, no county has written yet a single rule. There has been visible progress in such practices as strip cropping, pasture renovation, and soil liming, but none in fencing woodlots against grazing, and none in excluding plow and cow from steep slopes. The farmers, in short, have selected those remedial practices which were profitable anyhow, and ignored those which were more profitable to the community, but not clearly profitable to themselves. When one asks why no rules have been written, one is told that the community is not yet ready to support them. Education must precede rules, but the education actually in progress makes no mention of obligations to land over and above those dictated by self-interest. The net result is that we have more education but less soil, fewer healthy woods, and as many floods as in 1937. The puzzling aspect of such situations is that the existence of obligations over and above self-interest is taken for granted in such rural community enterprises as the betterment of roads, schools, churches, and baseball teams. Their existence is not taken for granted, nor as yet seriously discussed, in bettering the behavior of the water that falls in the land or the preserving of the beauty of or diversity of the farm landscape. Land use ethics are still governed wholly by economic self-interest, just as social ethics were a century ago. To sum up, we ask the farmer to do what he conveniently could to save his soil, and he has done just that, and only that. The farmer who clears the woods off a 75% slope, turns his cows into the clearing, and dumps its rainfall, rocks, and soil into the community creek is still, if otherwise decent, a respected member of society. If he puts lime on his fields and plants his crops on contour, he is still entitled to all the privileges and emoluments of his soil conservation district. The district is a beautiful piece of social machinery, but it is coughing along on two cylinders because we have been too timid and too anxious for quick success to tell the farmer the true magnitude of his obligations. Obligations have no meaning without conscience, and the problem we face is the extension of the social conscience from people to land. No important change in ethics was ever accomplished without an internal change in our intellectual emphasis, loyalties, affections, and convictions. The proof that conservation has not yet touched these foundations of conduct lies in the fact that philosophy and religion have not yet heard of it. In our attempt to make conservation easy, we have made it trivial.
That was Bruce White reading from the Sand County Almanac. It was some writing of Aldo Leopold talking about our responsibility and our actions on the land. And that was written way, way back in the middle of the last century. And we're going to get together and talk more about Aldo Leopold and the Sand County Almanac. First, we'll take a break. This is KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. I'm your host for today, Lana Nachtigall. I want to remind you, this Donna Lana Kitchen show and lots of other good stuff, too, comes to you on KHOI Community Radio. Community radio is a special thing here in the heart of Iowa. It's nice when a community grabs onto those FCC airwaves and hangs on tight because community radio, talking to one another, sharing our thoughts and information, and finding out about each other, that's an important thing. Community radio can do that. And I want to remind you that this is the fundraiser time. We ask for your support. If the Donna Lana Kitchen is floating around in your ears right now, that means you are listening, and we thank you. And that means we hope that you are a member. You can become a member of this fine station. The basic membership is $55, which isn't a whole lot. That's about 15 cents a day. You can do that, or there's opportunity to help a lot more. Yes, there is. I am here with Bruce White here in the Donna Lana Kitchen, and we urge you to be part of this community. Bruce, tell us why.
Yeah, together as a community, we can make sure that community radio, KHOI, stays in our community and grows to life better for all of us. Join me in supporting KHOI by becoming a member donor. Go to khoifm.org and click on the donate button. That's khoifm.org. You can also call into the station at 515-292-2878 or come in and become a member in person. KHOI is at 410 Douglas Avenue in the Ames Pentorium. Remember to go online at khoifm.org to check out KHOI and donate while you are there. Thank you. If you already donated, thank you for one neighbor to another.
Good. Thanks. Like I said, I am here in the kitchen with Bruce White, and we are talking about a wonderful event that Ames is celebrating, something called Aldo Leopold Reads, which is an event at the Ames Public Library this coming Sunday. And Bruce is involved with that. A lot of people are involved with that. He's organizing it this year. He is a retired, but I suppose one never retires really, from being an agroforester. What does an agroforester do, Bruce?
That's a question I get asked quite often. For many years, I worked in the agroforestry field. It's actually, to define agroforestry, it's the integration of trees and shrubs with crops and livestock in agricultural settings. So many times when you think about trees and forestry, the forest is over in one side of the property and the corn and soybeans are another side of the property. This is, we try to bring the two together. Could mean planting a shelter belt or windbreak to protect crops from soil erosion, hot, dry winds in the growing season. And also means planting a riparian forest buffer along our streams and rivers here in Iowa to try to reduce some of the nutrients that are getting into our streams and rivers. By having that natural planting of trees and shrubs and grasses along our streams, it helps soak up some of the excess nutrients that do run off some of our agricultural fields. And there are other aspects we look at, not real popular here in Iowa, but not really used, but integrating trees into livestock systems with grazing. In the Southeast, they use civil pastoral systems where you have pine trees combined with some of the native grasses and graze sheep and goats and cattle, as well as looking at alley cropping, which is another not readily used in Iowa. University of Missouri has done a lot of work for many years on alley cropping, where you plant rows of black walnut or Chinese chestnuts, other nut-producing crops in rows, and then you plant other crops between the rows of trees. So you're combining having trees and herbaceous crops. Could be grasses, could be row crops, even corn, soybeans, winter wheat, that type of thing, growing in between the rows. So it's been a fascinating number of years working in that field. It's not – we're a little bit like some of the other aspects of sustainable agriculture, it's tough to get acceptance. And
well, like Aldo Leopold talked about, it's well, people great if you have a government subsidy, we'll do it then. But the idea of doing the right thing, doing the best thing for the land, is something that comes from ethics, something from inside of us.
Right. Yeah, it's ethical value that, and I really do believe that most farmers who spend time working the land have that ethical value, and it's a hard thing to try to make that balance between being able to make enough money and profit on your land and be able to continue as a farmer, and while at the same time conserving and taking care of your resources. It's a tough life right now.
Yes, and the idea of, well, sustainable ag people, agroforestry people, we have to get used to talking to each other about it. I mean, it's kind of like talking about your wages or talking about politics or religion. You got to be careful about that. People have opinions, but there's something, like you said, we share this sort of thing. We share love for the land. Yes, we do. And Iowa has so many parts of the state that are farmed. They used to say fence row to fence row, and then they took out the fence rows, and then they farmed even more. The idea of edges are really important, where the wild meets the farmed, or the wild meets the tilled, and that's a good thing to remember. Right. Spring. I mentioned spring before, and this I don't know about you, but I think this spring is one of the hardest fought springs we've had in ages. Things seem late.
It seems like it's been really late. Yeah, the trees are just now beginning to bud out, and yeah, the cherry blossoms back east have come and gone, but we haven't seen our cherry blossoms here yet, or our crabapple blossoms. Or
not at all. Just elm trees are just starting to cut. Maples are just cut. The honey locust and the black locust, so those always seem to be the last to come anyway. But
right.
Things are just starting to get fuzzy out there, up there on top. And I kind of wonder about all the deer and all the animals out there. I've got a woodchuck out in front of my house, kind of wondering when my hostas are coming up so he can help himself. And things do seem late. I like to check out the woods every now and then. And this time of year, I kind of start wondering, when are the morels coming? Do you have a theory?
Well, I'm guessing they're probably hanging on a little bit late this year as well. I haven't been out to start hunting yet, I used to hunt. I haven't been hunting for morels for quite a few years, but the morels, ramps, which is a wild onion or wild leek, are commonly coming up about this time of year.
They sort of come up together.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Similar
times.
Time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in fact, I know there's a group from the Iowa chapter of the Society of American Foresters is meeting today, and they're out in the Reactor Woods near the edge of the university. And their walk was supposed to be looking at the wild ephemerals of the woodland flowers that typically would be coming up right now. We've had enough warm days for those things to pop out.
That's right. Spring beauties. I haven't seen a spring beauty yet.
Right.
Well, trout lilies are late. I just the name. One of my favorite spring flowers is the Dutchman's Breeches.
Right, it's one of my favorites as well.
There's another name for that, but they look like little breeches, and I look for them right away. Yeah, that's good. And well, then there's things that come later, but the spring beauties, and no, I haven't seen them yet. Either that, or they come up really fast, and the deer are eating them all. I know they're hungry out there. Yes, I do. Oh goodness. Do you have as an agroforester, someone who knows the plants and the landscape in the woods, what is the environment that a morel sort of likes?
Wow.
I know they're tricky.
Yeah, it used to be that when Dutch elm disease came through Iowa, quite a number of years ago now, but it seemed like there was a relationship between where there was an elm tree that had died and then the eventual sprouting of morels. And I know listening to some of the folks, Jim Pease and others, talk about looking for things here. And I think there's still some similarity. Some of the foresters here in Iowa are probably still saying that there's some relationship there. But I'm trying to remember all the different locations that morels will thrive, and it's very people get very protective when they do.
It's like a trout stream.
Right.
It's pretty nasty.
Once they know where there's a good spot for morels, that's their little secret, and they don't like to share it. The same way with some of the other plants that are in agroforestry. Another that kind of relates to agroforestry. That one aspect of agroforestry is the intentional management of some of these understory plants, mm-hmm. like morels, but also ginseng, golden seal, many other plants like that grow natively as a native plant in many understories in the eastern forest in the eastern U.S. And ginseng is another one, just kind of like morel, that people find it wild-grown ginseng was very profitable.
Yes.
I think I haven't looked at prices for that for quite a number of years, but it was one that you had to really look for. And like morels, people knew where they grew, and they kept it quite secretive. In fact, got to be rather a conflict between neighbors sometimes.
Ginseng wars.
Yeah, right, especially in the east.
Ginseng Iowa? Is it found here?
It is found.
It was, at least.
As far as I know, it was. It grew in the woodlands in the eastern part of the state. The native range certainly did come up into Iowa. Yeah.
Oh, really? I grew up in Wisconsin, and I remember a few families that they knew where their spots were, and so they did harvest. Morels I find, ramps I find. I have never – well, not that I know all my plants, but I probably would take my book out and look for certain things, and I have not seen ginseng.
Yeah, I'm not aware of ginseng up in this part of central Iowa.
Yeah.
It may have been here at one time, but certainly southeastern Iowa, I think they've had ginseng was present, and certainly earlier years it was pretty widespread, I think.
Ah, good. I'd like to appreciate what is growing out there, and – Bruce is here to talk about the Aldo Leopold event this weekend, Aldo Leopold Reads. And could you tell us a little bit about who is sponsoring that sort of thing?
Sure. We're really fortunate this year to have a number of partners that are working with us. The Ames Public Library, of course, and the Ames Public Library Friends Foundation have been instrumental in helping us with the location, since it will be on Sunday, April 29th at the public library. Some of the other members, partners that we are involved with is the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, who I'm representing, the Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park, Big Blue Stem Audubon Society, Iowa State University's Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing and Environment. In fact, they'll have two people there reading for us. KHOI Community Radio is a partner. Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, the Office of Sustainability and Live Green Initiative, the Practical Farmers of Iowa, who's your sponsor of this program, Story County Conservation, Sustainable Agriculture Graduate Student Association. So we're really thankful to have all those folks being part of this and helping get the word out about this event coming up on Sunday. And I really want to acknowledge and appreciate all the people who volunteered to be readers. We have quite a cross-section of folks from the community that will be reading segments and essays of Leopold, several Iowa State University students from the sustainable graduate students from sustainable agriculture, as well as the Master of Fine Arts. We have Clark Wolf, who's a professor at Iowa State, is going to be reading a segment from a different book called The River and Mother of God, talking about ecology and politics, which should be interesting.
Well, that's great. That's great. And be sure to take that in. I know there's a lot happening this weekend, but that's a nice thing to do from 2 to 4. This is KHOI 89.1. You're listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Go to khoifm.org. You can find the Donalana Kitchen archives there, and while you're at it, support KHOI with the donate button. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You know, the Donna Lana Kitchen has been part of the KHOI community since 2014. Oh, my goodness, who lasted this long? We've talked to lots of good people on this show. In July 2014, when we were just kind of getting on the ground and figuring this whole thing out, we had a radio program, and we talked to a local farmer. We talked to Gary Guthrie. He has a farm over by Nevada. He still is known as the carrot king around here. He grows the best carrots. Yes, he does. His farm is called Growing Harmony Farm. And in July 2014, we talked to him on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. So, believe it or not, we've got archives of this, and I kind of dug up some of this stuff. We found out that he likes to bake. This is a little bit from that show. He shared his baking story with us, and we learned about Gary Guthrie and his secret for a good pie crust. You're a man who knows his way around a pie, and I've had really good pie from you. So tell me, do you have a secret for pie crust?
That you're willing to
Oh, absolutely. I believe in sharing the wealth of pie.
I'll have to think about this.
It's evolved over time. It started out in Bolivia, actually, my pie baking. And when people came to visit, I promised them banana cream pie. And so in the span of 6 years in both Bolivia and El Salvador, I baked at least 300 pies during those 6 years. And my dad challenged me to keep track of my pies. So this last year, starting in the month of August, my birthday's in August, so I'm now at pie number 69, so I average one pie every 5.3 days, seems like.
69 pies just for this year.
Yeah, mostly sweet, some savory.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're good.
Found this last while I've been making just the very best pie crust. So it's if it's a two-crusted, you would double this. But it's 1 cup of flour, and I've actually been getting pastry flour from Wheatsfield because it is locally grown. It is exceptional. It really makes for a very delicate, very delicate
early morning harvest flour.
It is very good.
Mm-hmm. Very fresh.
So 1/3
tastes like real wheat.
Yep. 1/3 cup, and I'm sorry, I'm not a purist here, but I have found that the best oil or lard, whatever you want to call it, or shortening, is Crisco butter flavored, non-trans fat. I'm sorry, that's confessions here. I've tried to work with butter, and I guess maybe I need to continue working with it, but it always comes out stiffer.
Well, mm-hmm. we're of the butter and lard persuasion mixed.
Okay. Well, of these times we'll have to have a little contest or tasting here.
What a hardship!
So 1/3. The ratio is 1/3
to one.
To one, mm-hmm. And ice.
1/3
cup
flour.
Cup flour
to 1/3.
1/3 lard or
yes.
Whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Fat.
1/4 cup of ice water,
mm-hmm.
And then a little bit of salt. And then a friend told me about this also. It helps extract the water out of it, makes it flakier. I put a teaspoon of teaspoon to a tablespoon of powdered sugar.
Oh,
in it.
Powdered sugar. Okay, new tip.
And so I mix that in, and then I put it in the refrigerator overnight. It's at least an hour, and they talk about it. It relaxes the glutens mm-hmm. in the flour. And ever since I've been doing that, I roll it out. It might be a little moist, but I roll it out on flour. And I prefer to use ceramic pie plates, and it mm-hmm. seems like a nice even heat. And ever since I've been doing that for this past year, I have not had one single crust go bad on me. I mean, that it really was flaky, tasty, and light.
All right. A little culinary advice there from Gary Guthrie, a farmer from Nevada, Iowa. Thank you, Gary. He was one of our early guests on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. We interviewed him. We talked to him about pies, and we talked about carrots, because he really truly is known as the Carrot King around here. That was good. And a matter of fact, I had to boast a little bit there, but that show, we kind of wrapped that up and sent it off to a contest, and we won a broadcasting award for that one. So thanks to Gary for that advice, and thanks for a good show. If you want to find out more about the Donalana Kitchen, go to khoifm.org, and amid all the other great programs you'll find there, you can kind of find the talk section, you can find the Donalana section, and there's archives for all the past years we've been there. You can listen to any old show that you want if you can't get enough of us. And there's a recipe page, and there's also a video of us. You can see what we look like if you have the stomach for that. Oh, yes, you do. Okay, and you can support community radio while you are there. We are talking about Aldo Leopold. Aldo Leopold was a writer. He was born here in Iowa. He traveled all over and ended up in Wisconsin. He ended up at the University of Wisconsin. And talking with us today is Bruce White. He's organized this great event at the Ames Public Library. Well, he and other people have organized this great event at the Ames Public Library called Ames Reads Leopold, and you can be part of that event this weekend. Bruce, have you ever visited? There's supposed to be like this shrine, sort of, or this place where Aldo Leopold had a place that he referred to as the shack. Have you ever been there?
Yes, I had the opportunity to. We had a meeting in Wisconsin there at the Leopold Foundation. They have a beautiful education center there now, near where the shack is. And the shack relates to some land that Aldo bought back in the early 30s. And it was pretty much 80 acres of rather depleted land, had been abused. And he and his family spent almost every weekend, I think, up there doing something. It was that part of Wisconsin is very sandy, sandy soils. And if you think back to the 1930s, during the Dust Bowl that was occurring out in the Great Plains, but there were also events like that occurring here in the Midwest as well, with erosion of various sorts. But I know that those sands up there blow like crazy. I worked with some folks up there on windbreaks and shelter belts a number of years ago. But so I can just kind of visualize what kind of land he must have been trying to deal with. And they spent like I said, almost every weekend. I read one quote from one of his youngest daughters still living, Estella, and she's out in University of professor emeritus from the University of Washington. She's close to 90, I believe. But she made the comment that Dad would say, Mom and I are going to go out to the shack or go out to the farm. Anybody want to go along? And there's a resounding yes from the five kids that they wanted to go along with them. So it was over those many years of going out to the shack where they planted thousands of pine trees, they planted grasses, they tried to restore a marsh. All those activities is what rolled into many of the essays that are now in the Sand County Almanac, which is probably the most well-known piece of writing that Aldo Leopold wrote. This has lots of other essays, lots of other letters, journal articles that he produced over the many years. But that time at the shack with he and his family probably is the centerpiece of what has gone on. And it started out, the shack, if you kind of visualize this, it was an old chicken coop. This was an abandoned farm. I think the house had burned down, and this one building, which had been the chicken coop, was still standing. So they, over the years, they tried to renovate that and improve it a little bit. It was a place they at least, I'm trying to remember the inside of what it looked like, but it was rather primitive. And so they spent their time on a weekend, overnight, had campfires outside, told stories. And Aldo, I'm sure, explained all of the laws of nature to his five children. And probably not surprisingly, but all five of his kids ended up in some field of science as related to the natural world in some form or other, from studying streams and rivers. I know one was a geofluvialologist, but how streams change over the course of time. Mm-hmm. But They had a really interesting life, I think, and very close-knit family. They enjoyed their time at the shack.
Great. And that is it's a place people can visit now. I mean,
yes,
I think they've improved the little shack a little bit more.
To some degree, although they've kept it pretty close to the way
but you can
have,
visit there.
But it's available and for anyone that wants to visit at the Leopold Foundation near Baraboo, Wisconsin, in the central part of Wisconsin.
Well, good. Well, thank you for being with us today, Bruce, and give us the date and time of Ames Reads Leopold.
Yes, thank you. It's this coming Sunday, April 29th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at Ames Public Library, right downtown Ames on Douglas Avenue. So we welcome you to come. We'll have some refreshments, some beverages, be pretty informal. We'll spend some time, different individuals from the community will be reading segments of Leopold, and we'll have some time to talk about
Great.
It.
Well, thank you for sharing that information, and thank you, Bruce White.
Thank you.
Very good. Also, I want to remind you that this is kind of coming to the tail end of our KHOI fund drive, and you can always become a member. Please consider becoming a member. And that same Sunday, that evening, after you get done going to the Aldo Leopold reading at the library, come down the street because you can pop into the KHOI studios right under the Ames Pantorium sign, and we'll have a little reception. Come on and have a cookie with us. That'd be a good thing. We'll be celebrating. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've had a special guest here today, Bruce White, talking about Aldo Leopold. You can listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesdays live at noon, is repeated at 7 p.m. We had music today by Lisa Schnechtenberger. Yes, that is her name from her CD, Phantom Power. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks for your support. We're all in this together. My name is Lana Noctegal. We've had fine engineering by Cody Gaines. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.